so great until I saw the city.
Welcome back to Straight from the Source with Michael Russo. If you're not a subscriber, now is the time to get in. TheAthletic.com/straightfromthesource. $1 a month for 6 months. $1 a month for 6 months. And one big cool story that you will get to read if you subscribe is a Mikko Koivu story that will run late Wednesday or Thursday morning. Not just sort of a compliment to this podcast, which is a very special one, but voices from everybody from Saku Koivu to Jarmo Kekäläinen, the Columbus Blue Jackets GM, to Doug Risebrough, the man who drafted Mikko Koivu 2001 in the first round. So it should be a really good, cool story to compliment this podcast, whose guest is Mikko Koivu. Sat down with Mikko last week, a very relaxed, a very jovial Mikko Koivu. I've mentioned a couple times lately that it just feels like Mikko is really embracing this new role, this new after-career role that he's going to have, whatever it's going to be in the Minnesota Wild organization. It's not really defined yet, but very, very appreciative of the Wild putting his number 9 on the rafters, the first player in Minnesota Wild history to have his number retired by the organization. It'll be put up on the rafters Sunday night. The ceremony begins at 5 o'clock. Game to follow against the Nashville Predators. The gates open at 3:45. Mikko Koivu will drop the ceremonial opening faceoff with Jared Spurgeon, the Wild captain, Mikael Granlund, in a cool little gesture by the Nashville Predators. Mikael, who for a long time was Mikko's protege here with the Wild, he'll take the puck drop with Jared Spurgeon. So it should be really cool. But the podcast is awesome. Hope you enjoy it. He really... so relaxed, cracking jokes left and right, really cutting open a vein about how hard it was, even not just as an NHLer, but as a kid, as a teenager, being in Saku's shadow, and how they weren't close at the very beginning, and now they are very, very close. You know, he loves hanging out with Mikko's, with Saku's kids, and vice versa as well. So that's pretty cool. We talk, about his favorite arenas, his favorite opponents, the teams that he hated to play against the most. He tells a really touching story about his son. At the end of the podcast as well, he talks about his demeanor and his intensity and being maybe too serious at times with not only reporters, which you all know, and linesmen, which you all definitely know, but even his own teammates, and how hard he was on guys like Eric Halla and Kevin Fiala and people like that. But he did it for a reason, but maybe sometimes he went a little too far and felt poorly on the way home and things like that. So, you know, just a really neat podcast, because this is just not a demeanor that we ever see Mikko in, right? I mean, you know, this is a fiery competitor, somebody that you saw on the ice how intense he could be, and you know, here he is sitting down for a 50-minute podcast. So I really, really hope everybody enjoys it, and I hope everybody enjoys the ceremony Sunday against the Nashville Predators. I have a cool podcast coming next week with a couple of former teammates that are coming in for the ceremony. I don't want to give away who it is yet. But I have a couple guys lined up right now, but I don't want to give away who it is, mostly because Mikko, in a large part, the 24 former teammates of his that are coming in for the ceremony, a lot of it is a surprise to Mikko as well. And a couple of people that played instrumental roles in his career behind the scenes as well are coming in for the ceremony. And he's got, I believe, dozens of friends and family coming in from Finland as well. So there'll be about 80 guests at the game, and I'm sure that party will be rocking after the game as well. So hopefully everybody enjoys this podcast. As I mentioned, Wild won 5-2 tonight. Really quality game by the Wild, something that they needed. This is a team that had lost 8 of 10 coming into the tonight. They had a really hard practice on Monday, and it really felt like it really transferred into tonight's game. A couple great signs in tonight's game. And again, a game that really means nothing if the Wild go and lay eggs in Detroit and Columbus coming up here on Thursday and Friday night. But a good start tonight, because they defended well. They got quality goaltending from Cam Talbot. They didn't take a penalty, which really helped their really awful penalty kill lately. That's a good start when you don't take a penalty and your penalty kill is at about 63% the last 13 games. But they didn't have to pull the goalie, because this is a team, again, last 13 games, they've given up 11 empty net goals. In the last 9 occasions they've pulled the goalie, they've given up 11 empty net goals. And so, that was something that was good, because they had the 5-2 lead going into the third period. But what was really uplifting about tonight's game or encouraging about tonight's game is that when Mika Zibanejad scored the tying goal shorthanded there in the second period, not only didn't the Wild panic, not only did the Wild not let that crumble their game like they've done so often lately when adversity strikes their game, but then on the same exact power play with 13 seconds left in the power play, Kevin Fiala buries Matt Boldy's perfect pass. Matt Boldy put on the number two unit tonight. Ryan Hartman moved up to the number one. And on that power play, it was just a huge, huge moment. And it was the first of two second period goals by Kevin Fiala, who just continues to just be so, so good for this team. I know, look, you know, he makes the turnovers every now and then. Obviously, he fell on the knife for a couple of mistakes he made in Buffalo. But it's never because of a lack of effort with Kevin Fiala. And it's certainly not, to me, like, I could say that earlier this season and at times last year, it felt like that Kevin Fiala couldn't outscore the mistakes he would make in games. In other words, he would hurt the team more just by the mistakes he would make rather than the goals or the points that he produced. It's not that way anymore. I mean, he is in a consistent run here for the last 3 months where he's not only producing, but to me, just working his butt off and being a real quality player for this team. He's got 16 goals and 33 points in his last 26 games, just playing really, really well. So I liked his game. Marcus Foligno admitted after the game that he has not been very happy with his game of late and that he thinks it's probably not a coincidence that the team has struggled in large part because of that. You know, we always look at Marcus Foligno as somebody that's an engine of this team, a guy that is an identity player and plays the type of game that the Wild want to be their identity, you know, hard-hitting, aggressive, physical, north-south. And tonight, this is a guy that you know, really the last couple of days have been saying a lot of things about how they haven't quit and their work ethic needed to be good and just so many things. And, you know, if you're going to talk that talk, you got to walk the walk. And he definitely did that tonight with a goal and two assists, his sixth career third 3-point game. Joel Eriksson Ek scored a really cool goal, a great bunting, you know, redirection that, you know, and if it was probably waved a no goal, it would have been a no goal. But since it was waved good goal, it couldn't be overturned anyway because of a potential high stick. I don't think it was above the crossbar, but it was close. And Marcus Foligno joked after the game that he was aiming for Eriksson Ek's teeth, and he blocked it into the goal. So he scored his 17th goal, and then Ryan Hartman heating up again, 4 goals in his last 4 games, and 23 on the season. A couple other things. The other day in my game story, I talked about potentially trading for Shea Weber and getting a benefit of that $7.857 million cap hit for the next 4 years, and maybe that would help the Wild if they put him on LTIR. It's a lot more complicated than that. It just will not work. I had a really quality conference call with a couple people today that really walked me through it, and while it can be done and you can go over the cap in the offseason, this is a team that does not want to go over the cap via, you don't want to be an LTI essentially. And either way, getting Shea Weber would just not alleviate any of the pressure for the Wild. So, I probably wrote that a little too quickly. And if you want a little more of an explanation in his 32 thoughts that was published about a half hour ago, Elliot Friedman, who also talked about this the last couple weeks or last couple podcasts, he mentions why it wouldn't work. So he has a really good explanation in there. So I highly recommend you reading that. The other thing that that I wrote today that hopefully everybody reads is we'll have a trade tracker on the Athletic website and the Athletic app for the next little bit. Anytime the Wild make moves, or not even moves, but just anytime there's any new information regarding the trade deadline. The latest is on Jack McBain, the Boston College senior, 18 goals going into Wednesday's single elimination Hockey East opening round game against the University of New Hampshire. If they win, they'll play Saturday night. If they lose, McBain's college career is over. Broke out this year after, pretty pedestrian freshman, sophomore, and junior years at Boston College. Well, the Wild had always figured that they were going to sign him after the year. In fact, if you remember a couple months ago, Bill Guerin actually visited Boston College specifically to scout McBain. Well, as it turns out, the Wild have been informed, the way that I understand it, is that he is not going to sign with Minnesota and that you might want to trade his rights. So the Wild have given his advisor the permission to talked to a bunch of different teams, have told them, do not come to me with one team, come to me with a number. And I believe, you know, being a third round pick in 2018, I've got to think the Wild are going to be looking for a second round pick. Or if it's a team that the Wild would actually be interested in a rental, using McBain as one of those players and the pieces in the deal. But I think it's going to be somebody that he's going to be looking for a second. A lot of teams are interested in a 6'4 center that can skate. And so it's a shame that he's not going to sign here. My gut says that Jack looks at this organization suddenly is having a Ryan Hartman, who is a right wing, suddenly become their top line center. Joel Eriksson-Ek, who is probably the player that Jack McBain hopes that he can become, and that role is filled here for the next 8 years. And then Freddie Goudreau is the third line center. So while the Wild we're going to sign him and put him right into the lineup or give him the opportunity to play right away, it looks like that he is not going to sign, and they are likely going to trade his rights. If Bill Guerin doesn't get what he wants, though, it wouldn't be shocking to me if he makes him wait until August 15, and then he can sign as a free agent somewhere, and you got to sign a 2-year deal and not burn that first year. The team that makes sense to me is Winnipeg. His dad played for the old Winnipeg Jets. It's a team that's going to lose Kopp, probably Stastny. Roles will be open there for Jack McBain. So it's a shame they're not signing him. They're not going to be able to sign him, but that's just the way it is. Thursday, I wanted to just give everybody a heads up. So we do these live rooms now on the Athletic website and the Athletic app. And basically what they are live radio shows. And I'll go as long as you want, as long as I can, as long as I get my work done before the day. Obviously, we have an 11:30 morning skate on Thursday. The live room will start at 1:30 Central Time, 2:30 Eastern, promptly. I will put out a link for it, or you'll see the push notification on your app, or you just literally go into your app at 1:30 and you're going to see my cheery, beautiful face there. You click join the room. And the way it works is that if you're not an Athletic subscriber, you can listen in. Fine. No big deal. If you are an Athletic subscriber, you will be able to click a button, I guess. I'm going to get a little tutorial in the next couple of days. You'll be able to click a button, sort of raise your hand. I'll call on you and you get to ask a question. It's going to literally be like a live Q&A podcast, a live recorded, live audio mailbag, a radio show. Kevin Kurz and a lot of people at The Athletic are Islanders writer, but a lot of people at The Athletic have told me how much they absolutely love doing this. And what's really cool is that I essentially have the keys, so I'll decide how long it goes. And the other thing is that once I get my tutorial on this, I out of boredom could just start one. I mean, you might see out of the blue, I just start a live room one day. And I think that's going to be the really cool thing. You know, it's another way to get closer to the readers or subscribers, the fans of the Wild. So after I do this first one, if I like it, don't be surprised if all of a sudden, just every now and then, you just get a push notification that, hey, Russo, starting a live room, come join it. And I'll be hopefully doing this more and more. And they're probably a little less stressful, a little less exhausting than my meaty mailbags that I haven't done a lot of this year that I probably should do coming up here. So again, Mikko Koivu, a really fun podcast. Hopefully everybody enjoys it. Sorry about the Shea Weber getting your hopes up there, but it's just not going to happen. That is definitely my fault. I'm trying to think anything else that I'm forgetting here. At Detroit Thursday, at Columbus Friday, Sunday, Mikko Koivu night. Again, 5:00 ceremony, 3:45, the gates open. Speaking of Mikko, here's Mikko now after a word from one of our sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Well, really happy to be joined by Mikko Koivu. It's been an honor for me to finally have you join this podcast, Mikko. It's been a long, long time that I've been trying to get you. And here, all it took was a number retirement for you to come on here.
Well, thanks for having me. And I did try to avoid it as long as I could, but now I felt that I can't hide it anymore. So no, yeah. It's good to be here. Thanks. Yeah.
How, I mean, this has got to be just an incredible week for you here. You got a bunch of family coming in for this, bunch of friends coming in for this, bunch of former teammates coming in for this. It's just got to be a humbling experience. And I can't even imagine what your emotions are going to be like on the actual day.
It is. It's, very humbled. I think the way I could describe it is like, you don't even really dream about it it's hard to realize what's happening, what to expect. You've been in a couple of these on the road when jerseys had been retired when we were at a visiting team, and you get emotional on those days. And I think for me, it's just trying to prepare the best I can, and really, really trying to sink everything in, enjoy the moment, enjoy the friends and family. Like you mentioned, the former teammates. I'm not even sure who's all. I think that's part of the surprise.
Yeah.
But that's kind of that's the journey that you've been on for so long. And these are all the people that has supported me one way or the other. Either it's on the ice or off the ice, or obviously family. And so that's, to me, the best part. And obviously with the fans as well, to be able to be in front of them one more time on a night like this. So something that I can't really even describe what the feelings are like. And like I said, I think the thing is that you don't really know what to expect, even if you kind of know what it's all about.
I mean, it really is unbelievable. You've seen it all in this organization. I mean, you were drafted year two of this organization 21 years ago. It's crazy. You have almost every single record in Wild history. Games played, assists, points, shots, shootout goals. I mean, face-offs, everything. Time on ice for forwards. It's crazy how much you've seen. Every owner, every GM, every coach. In a lot of ways, this really does feel fitting. You were such a great teammate. You absolutely, bled green and red. It's pretty amazing the way that you really represented the Minnesota Wild over the years, Mika.
I think for me, I think, I mentioned this before, I think I really take and always took pride for representing first my club team back in Turku, Finland, then national team Finland, and then the Wild. And I think it just always meant to me that I want to be loyal to the team. I want to go through the ups and downs. And I've always been happy here. It's just the way my teammates, the staff, the management, the fans, just in general, people in Minnesota, it's just, if they just treated me well ever since I got here. So I never thought about it. And also the team was always getting better. We had that ups and downs, obviously, and we had a good team. When I first started, I got into the playoffs, then we got a little bit off from it for a couple of years, but it was always improving. We had those young guys coming up, taking more and more ice time, taking more and more role. And so I think that was always a goal for next year, and we were always getting better. And that, to me as a player, it was something obviously that kept me motivated. And but just like I said, the fans and the culture, everything here in Minnesota, being as a hockey player, it just felt right.
Yeah, I remember I wasn't in the bubble in Edmonton, but at the end of the game when you guys lost, they really showed a lot of you on Fox Sports North here in Minnesota, and I think you were almost last to leave the ice. You were really watching it. You were really taking it in. I mean, what was going through your head at that moment? I mean, did you pretty much know that was probably your last game in this uniform?
I had a feeling. I think it was really hard. After the game in the locker room, I remember that moment. But I think at the same time, like, you don't want to accept that. I think looking back now, I think it was time for me. It was I don't know. It was, and then those are the decisions, like the management, they have to make it. Mm-hmm. Did it feel good at the point? No. Once I heard about it, then a couple of weeks after the season and things like that. So, but I think, you know, once the emotions kind of settle a little bit, and then you look back, what you went through here, and then mm-hmm. you were fortunate enough to play in for so many years.
Yeah.
And so I think it was hard. It really was, but I think I learned a lot from it. Yeah, it's just it's like we always say, it's a business, and you got to put the emotions aside of it, and that's life being as a hockey player.
Yeah,
or in the hockey world, I should say.
Yeah, I mean, it really, unfortunately, all careers come to end in one city, and you basically played your entire career here.
Yeah.
You really, just looking at you. Whenever I see you around here, you know, I'm sure at first this season it was awkward, you know, being around the guys. But now you really feel, it looks to me like you're really embracing this new whatever your role is going to be, but embracing this new chapter in your life. You're jovial when I see you around here. You sit next to Billy Guerin, you know, like it really feels like you're also extremely appreciative of just, you know, what this organization has done for you, what you gave it, and now what this next chapter is going to be, whatever it is in this organization.
Yeah, it's hard to describe what it means to me, how much it means to me. And it's just, I think it's, like I said, it's three teams for me. It's TPS, my mm-hmm. obviously Team Finland, and then the Wild. And I think once you're so long with the same team, and how much it matters to me, and like I said, I know how much it matters for the people in Minnesota. I'm just very mm-hmm. proud of it. To be a member of this organization and this team, and I think everyone who puts that sweater on should be mm-hmm. and should know the traditions in Minnesota, how much it means to people, and it reminds me of hockey in Finland, what Team Finland means to people there, and things like that. So that was the thing that was driven to me, and I really wanted to make the people proud of the Wild, and also us players realize like how much this actually means to people here in the state of hockey.
Yeah. Got a lot of really cool questions from readers. One from your favorite former goalie.
Yeah, I won't answer that one.
Yeah. We'll get to that in a second. One hilarious question that I got was from a reader that said, was there ever a faceoff that you actually deserved to get kicked out of the circle for?
No.
Was there ever a faceoff that you deserved to get kicked out? Like, I mean, that was always like the one thing.
Yeah, I got
to
give some for the Lineys too. They they were pretty good. But, you know, it's funny. Now that I've being away from the game a little bit, then now that I come and see the games, and sometimes you meet the referees or the linesmen, mm-hmm. and now we joke about it. It was but you know what? Even that, I know I wasn't the easiest. You know, you're competitive, and I think that's referees, like they're going to face that and all mm-hmm. that. But I did it for believing that there's mind games in it, and it would help our team to get, like, we're not going to get, you know,
yeah,
bad decisions by the refs just because we're like, we're okay with it or whatever. So there was a lot of nice that I would be like, maybe I should step on a little bit and all that. But I think we're all good now, and it's part of the game.
Yeah. What makes a good faceoff guy? Because that is one area where the Wild are trying to improve. It's been a struggle, especially of late. Like, what makes a good faceoff guy? And can you, like, is it a natural thing, or can you actually improve your craft there?
I think you can improve. I think it tells, if you look at the rookie centers that come into the league, usually your numbers get better if you want to work at it.
Yeah.
And it happened to me. I think it's a big jump from you know, the minor league or mm-hmm. from the European league. When it comes to NHL, I think it's more detailed in the NHL. And so, yes, you can get a lot better. What makes it good? There's so many different styles. And I think it's there's so many things that go into the face-off that I think you learn by watching video, learning from your teammates, things like that. So there's, like I said, there's so many good face-off guys, mm-hmm. and they all have their own unique style.
Yeah.
And I think you just have to kind of figure that out.
You were known for that huge knob on of tape on the end of your stick. What was that for grip, or what was the big reason for that?
Yeah, that was for grip. Mm-hmm. But I never hauled from my knob when I was taking a face off.
Right.
So that had nothing to do with the face off.
Okay,
so
it was just, more
that I felt comfortable with, and mm-hmm. Tried to get rid of that every summer, but couldn't. So
because it always went back to it.
Oh yeah, and then you had to retape it every single game uh-huh. day, and so it became a routine, but it wasn't always fun.
A lot of questions. Ryan was the big one, asked why did you blow or kiss on your glove before a face off?
Oh, that was to spit, just to get a better grip on on the stick, and a lot of times I would have dry gloves, so you mm-hmm. want to make sure that you have the grip going into the face off, and part of probably is just, you know, a habit that you don't even realize you're doing.
Yeah.
And gives you comfort.
Yeah.
Gives you confidence going in.
Yeah.
For the most part, it's just get a better grip on the stick.
How will it be cool that Granny's going to be here for your big night?
Like I said, having a chance to have your friends and family and mm-hmm. former teammates here. But then he didn't even know about it.
Yeah.
I'm like, you guys are going to be here. Oh yeah, really? So typical Granny. But yeah, I think, I obviously we have a close relationship and he's one of the guys that I have a lot of respect for, for his work ethic and obviously the player he is, but more off the ice. And, so it'll be cool to have him in it. And, that those are the things that matters to me, and makes the night very, very special.
Here's a question from one of your former goalies, your favorite one. Why does Saku beat you in tennis and golf, and do you still fight after that?
So there you go. He's always wrong. It's not tennis and golf. It was.
This is from Nicholas Baxter.
Oh, if you don't realize. I figured. Surprisingly, he can talk now, huh?
He's been, you know, he's got this great cushy gig for Columbus.
I know.
I think he scouted you. That's why he signed there.
Yeah.
It was a basketball game. This is back in when we were still both playing, and we would have a friendly basketball game on a Sunday afternoon before the week starts with our buddies, and it was a 3-on-3 game, and we were facing. Like he was in the other team, I was in the other team, and it got heated, and ended up with a fight. Not a big fight, but anyways, and then we, two grown-up men, we went for a week without talking to each other, and I think that's what he's talking about, but we're not playing basketball or anything else anymore. Trying to stay away from it, and golf, he's so bad at it, so you can't really make a game out of it.
I remember when I talked to Saku for your 1,000 game story, he was really, really good on for those stories. And the one anecdote he said is how, you know, he's 7 years older than you. And when you first came
nine,
to
actually,
nine, yeah.
Yeah.
And when you first got drafted, I mean, he, your father, you, even none of you guys wanted Montreal to take you because you wanted to carve out your own futures. And I remember even like your first time that you played Montreal, you really were hesitant to even talk about going up against him, which, by the way, you won the first faceoff of that game and I think stole the puck from him for the overtime winner by Foster. I think
they scored on us though the first shift.
Yeah.
So didn't start the way I wanted.
Yeah. But it did end well for you. But slowly, the one thing I always noticed is that I would do, I probably did 3 or 4 brother stories throughout your career. And as you got older and more established as a player and as a man, you were very willing to talk about it. And I think that probably shows your maturation as a player. You suddenly were a confident hockey player. And is that how it wound up being? Because he brought that up, that, you know, at the end of your careers, you guys were, you know, perfectly fine chatting about each other because it wasn't anymore that you were in his shadow.
Yeah, I think so. And by the way, it had nothing to do with the Montreal Canadiens.
Yeah,
that I didn't want to get drafted.
Right, right.
It was just the pressure.
Right.
And I had to deal with that. And I don't want to sound dramatic by any means, but it wasn't always easy because when he was with, especially with Team Finland, and so he was a big star when I was growing up, and I would hear a lot about that. just because my last name was Koivu, and I'm trying to prove myself as a hockey player. And I didn't always probably handle it the right way. But I think you learn from it. But it really did feel, I remember still when I went to Houston for my first year, and I felt like free. It was just, I could just be me. I could just, you know, didn't have any questions about my, you know, brother or family, or you had to earn everything. Not that I didn't, but there was a lot of people that doubted that I didn't earn it myself back when I was in juniors, or back when I turned pro in Finland. And we know that it's, and we talked about it with our family, and we were always kind of open about it for the most part. But those are just the things that you can't really control. And it's sad that it goes that way, you know, that people are trying to, I don't know what the word would be, but just like, just, you know,
compare the,
yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's natural, but it wasn't, like I said, it wasn't always fun. But the Houston year, it was really, I still remember, it was just awesome. Like, just, you know, be almost like free, and everything was new, and great group of guys, great coaching.
You had a great season, right? Didn't you guys go to the, did you win it all that year, or am I
No,
wrong?
That was okay. The year before.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that they won. So we had a great team, a lot of injuries though, and things like that, but just the learning, and it was great.
Yeah, Todd McClellan really coached on there.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then coincidentally, so years later, he's in Anaheim. He's got to decide whether or not to re-sign there, I believe, or come to Minnesota. That was one of
that the was after Montreal.
Oh, okay, that was after Montreal.
Yeah.
And same thing. I think he told me that he did. He really genuinely just was weighing whether or not to sign with the Wild. But then it was sort of the same thing. He didn't want to put pressure on himself to be in your shadows, and also didn't want to put pressure on you if he came here and was getting older and suddenly he was under scrutiny, that he didn't want you to have to experience that.
Yeah. And to be honest, we didn't talk about it a lot at the point. I didn't want to, I obviously, he's going to make his own decisions and things like that. But I think I knew what he's going through, why is he leaning up, you know, either Anaheim or what other teams were on the table. But, and I think it matters because we're both centers.
Yeah.
You know, let's say if he was a defenseman or I was a defenseman, he was a center, you know, it would be totally different. But you're kind of basically playing for the same ice time, and you're on the same role on the team. And
who's going to take the big draw at the
end
of the game?
Yeah, like things like that, you know. So I think that's kind of why it made it hard. And then we had a chance to play in the national team. So we got to experience that playing together as you know, teammates and things like that. So I thought it was good. And you can't really explain that before, you know, both brothers playing the NHL or especially, like I said, being on the same spot on the team, like centers, wingers, whatever it might be. I think it's important that everyone goes through on their own and can kind of feel comfortable about that and make the name for themselves.
Yeah. What do you think his reaction, your parents will be? I always look at your father as this guy, very stoic. You know, every time I've even said hello to him, I'm like, I hope he doesn't, you know, hate me. But
he's actually the opposite.
Yeah.
I hear that a lot by myself. But
what do you think their reaction is going to be on Sunday?
I don't know. It's, I'm sure, emotional.
Yeah.
I think we all will be. I think that's natural. And I think this is kind of the, well, my brother was here as well as my parents, but he was here for the 1,000 game. And I think that was the first time that he actually witnessed something, you know, being here as my brother. Usually it's been the other way around that I always go see him and things like that. But I think it's a big deal for all our whole family. And I'm sure parents are feeling proud about, you know, their kid and or kids. And I think it'll be very emotional but obviously a very special night for all of us.
Definitely. Another question from Nicholas Bashman, and then I promise I'll get to Twitter questions. Essa, why have you at no level ever scored on him one time?
What was that again?
Nick wants to know, why have you not been able to score on him at any level?
Well, because he was my teammate for the longest in the NHL, and I was too young when I was back in Finland. So for practice, I would own him, and obviously he knows that. So actually, I didn't know about that fact, but... Yeah.
He keeps track of it. I think he knows everybody. That's the one that, like, people, I don't think Wild fans realize how hilarious of a guy Nicholas Backstrom was. Like,
I don't think he's hilarious.
That guy, honestly.
I'm just kidding.
You know, one of my favorite memories, honestly, was I used to lean against the wall and just listen to him and Derek Boogaard just go back and forth to each other. It was like a comedy routine. It was like a Comedy Central roast. They would just roast each other.
I think it's, I think a lot of times, and, like, you know, when you're around the hockey team or any athlete, probably we all prepare differently. Mm-hmm. And Nick was very, very detailed on his routines and very strict about, like, you know, all like day before the game and the game day, obviously, and things like that. So I think that's just being, like I've said before, he's one of the, most respected pros that I know in this game.
Yeah.
The way he prepared, the way he took care of his body and was getting ready for each and every night and things like that. So, but it doesn't mean that you're not funny. If you're serious about your job and you want to do the best you can. And so that was his way of doing things. I had my way. I was serious too, I've been told. And sometimes probably too serious, but, that's just, you know, that's just, you feel comfortable with, and you know you can be at your best doing the things to try to win. And then there's some guys that joke around, and that makes them better.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's we're all different once you take your skates off and you're off the ice.
No doubt. Nick, still the winningest goalie in Wild history. But it is true about, like, you. Like, you were super serious, super intense, but yet in the locker room, like, nobody actually could make me laugh louder than you. I mean, because when you hit you, and it was usually a piercing joke too. I mean, you were very sarcastic, but that was your way. Do you think, Lo, like, when you look back at your career, do you think at times that you enjoyed it as much as you could have? Like, was there, like, when you look back now, I mean, do you think that times maybe you were too serious, too intense?
Yeah, I've thought about that. I think, and I'm sure everyone does, you know, you think about back your career and, but, you know, it's interesting. I had a talk with Jacques Lemaire, a couple of days ago, and I actually said that maybe sometimes I was a little too stubborn or, you know, even with him, like, he was always right. And, but he said it like, well, that's what made you a player that you were. So I think there's always times, if you look back, like, you could have, you know, act different, or I think you also learn from it and things like that. But I felt that's the way I can be at my best. So would I change it? I know. Yeah. And I don't think it would make a difference. I think it worked for me. And then I guess the best way to describe it is like that was my way of preparing for each and every game to be at my best.
Yeah. You know what I've never asked you, especially because it was during your playing days, was the whole when the Wild signed Parisi and Suter. I mean, you know, was that dynamic hard in terms of at first, like, you know, everybody, because they were local, you know, media fans sort of gravitating to them, always getting to them after games? I mean, was it ever a difficult thing for you?
No. And why I say that is because I kind of knew I played for my, not that it's at the same level by any means, but when I played for my hometown team in Finland, in TPS, it would be the same thing there. It's if you had a Canadian or US born player or even Swedish player coming in, they would never be the same than the local kid.
Right.
And so I knew that coming in, and that didn't bother me. Actually, I think it helped me to just do my thing and then prepare my way. And it took kind of, you know, a little bit things away from my plate as well.
Right.
And so, yeah.
You don't have to be the voice every single game.
Exactly. And especially with the media. Yeah. And I think it's good to have that, you know, with the team that you have.
Yeah.
And I think it always, you know, brings the team more in the to the map too, like more better players you have and gives confidence to everyone and things like that. So, but yeah, that never bothered me.
Every player hates to lose, but you really hated to lose. You hated to lose. I mean, I still, like, I've covered this league a long time. Like, if I was going to ask you a question after a loss, I used to think about my words, you know, I'd walk on eggshells. I mean, you know, where does that come from? Like you would be, you'd like, you know, players have a 5-minute cooldown period. You probably needed a 30.
Yeah. That's something that I tried to work at it, you know, throughout my career. I think I got a little bit better once I got a little bit older too. I think it goes the same thing, how I just wanted to take pride to be a Minnesota Wild.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to accept us losing but then I think you also learn once you're in the NHL, like 82 games and things like that, like you gotta let it go. But I just wanted never to accept that. And that was my way of just dealing with it. And I think with media, I think it was something like, if like you still gotta respect us, that's kind of how I felt. And I didn't want to lie about it. Like if we lost and then things like that. So like, why do we lose? Or like, we don't know. It's 2 minutes after the game. Like, you know, like I don't have an answer for you. So I think that's sometimes you get frustrated as a player. But I, even at that, I still always try to obviously do it with respect for the reporters. And well, like we had it sometimes, you know, it's
we had our little moments, and then you
meet up the next day or the next week and you apologize and life goes on. So,
well, I mean, remember when we lived in the same neighborhood, a couple times we'd meet at Terracino and have a little blueberry muffin and a coffee, sort of iron out our little spat from the day before, which was always kind of fun. You know what I realized when we went to Finland in 2010 is, you know, one, how, I mean, it was really cool for me to see how beloved you were by the fans there. I mean, they just love that you were there. But the one thing that, like, I realized too is that, like, in Finland, when you're doing pro, when you're like the media is really not in the room, right? It's all sort of mixed zones and things like that. And that probably also was like a change for you. You come to Minnesota and you're like, why the hell are these media members in the locker room?
It is, And also, you know what the biggest difference here is? It's the language.
Yeah.
Like, and which we never. And you have to be so careful what you say, especially with the social media these days. And so you don't want to say things that, you know, people think or take it in the wrong way.
Right.
And I think that's something that I always wanted to be very careful with, that because it is like there's so many things that you would like to say, but you're not sure. Should I say that? Should I not say that? And so I think that's also the thing, like, especially after a loss or, you know, you're just still in the game mode and things like that. So it's, I think that's something that I'm sure every European player goes through, and I think obviously you learn over the years, but it's still not the same than giving an interview in Finnish.
Right. A lot of questions about if you've ever wanted to punch me out, or like what's the most annoying question I've ever asked you.
Does no one like your podcast here, or what's going on?
I think they just know that, you know, angry Miko at times, you know, I could set you off. There's no doubt about it. But you always stood there. I mean, that was the one thing about it, you know, and I've told you a million times. I mean, you know, like your first day in that Wild locker room for actual training camp was my first day covering this team. September of 2005. And I remember
you're getting old.
Trust me, well aware. And I walk in the locker room. You're the first person I see, young Mikko Koivu, just straight ahead from the door in the locker room. And I think you might have been the first person I came up to. You know, and like you think about how long ago that was. It's pretty nuts. I mean, you legitimately grew up in Minnesota.
Yeah, I think it's something that a lot of the players talk how fast it goes. Mm-hmm. And I've said it, like, yeah, I do realize and this and that. But now that you look back, like, it just, it went like, you can't, like you said, 21 years ago, and I still remember the draft like yesterday, and it's just, yeah, it's amazing. But I did
Florida,
enjoy
it. Right? It was in Florida?
Yeah, it was. And but I do remember a lot of the times that when I really enjoyed, you know, playing and prepare, and I would stop and think, like, just get it in. Like, mm-hmm. like this is awesome. Like, yeah, I was always so proud and, like, happy to get out there at the XL Energy Center, mm-hmm. even practices or pregame skates, or it was just, I think it becomes like a lifestyle, obviously, but just, you know, being around the people we can. And I think that's one thing too, you realize like how many great people there are around this game. I think it's just very, very special. Yeah.
Some more questions, Mikko. You've been very generous with your time here. A big week too. Here's a really good, two good questions on the same subject. One from Mariah: what is the hardest part of being the captain of a team? And two from Craig: what's the biggest joy of being the captain of the team?
I think the hardest is when you're not winning. I think I think the responsibility, at least for me, was you want to help so much. And sometimes, you know, things are not just going your way. That's just pro sports and things like that. That is the hardest. But also, those are the moments when individuals, mm-hmm. players, or as a team, you can just get better. Mm-hmm. And you learn so much, not just for the game, but just for life and all that. And the best, to be honest, I think for me was, like you mentioned, Granny. Mm-hmm. Is that when you see a guy like Granny, or I think my days, like the best example is Eric Halla. I was pretty hard on him, but I thought, or I believe that he needs that. Mm-hmm. And when you see him becoming what he is, and when he tells me, like, now I know why you did the way you did it, that feeling, like, that's tough to beat.
Yeah. I remember some of your coaches said that, like, guy like Fiala was somebody that you were hard on, and that seemed to be what was, like, you had no problem being being that guy that would challenge a player, challenge a teammate.
Well, I think you have to, mm-hmm. you know, in a way, and everyone does it differently. I think that's part of being a captain, and it's part of being a veteran guy. Mm-hmm. But I think what I always, and obviously you would go home after the skate and you were like, well, maybe did I go too much? Did it go over top? But I always believe that if I have a good meaning behind it,
yep.
I can be okay with it.
Yeah.
And then rest of it is up to them. Like, do they get it or do they not?
Yeah.
And like I said, when, you know, talk to, for example, Granny or Halla, and when they say, like, now I know what you meant, you know, after a year, then that's a great feeling.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
But also credit to them. You know? Like, it's, they want to be better and they want to get there. And I'm sure it wasn't always easy for any of us.
A lot of people asked about your bread and butter signature shootout move, where that all started. Why do you think it worked so much? You have the most shootout goals in Wild history.
Yeah, that started in in Houston, the lockout year. Mm-hmm. That was the first year actually shootout came into the game, I think, mm-hmm. you know, after regulation loss or tied. And I don't know. It just came by accident or whatever you want to call that. It worked. And then I just, you know, started to work on it a little bit and did a little tweaks every now and then. And just felt comfortable. And I think going into a shootout, you just have to feel the confidence going in. Like, you got to know what you're going to do. Because it happened so fast. So, and after that, it was just, to me, it was speed and timing. And mm-hmm. obviously to get the puck up fast and hoping that it's not going to roll.
I have no doubt that Jared Spurgeon's a very different captain than you. Adam asks, when did you start noticing Spurge's leadership qualities? And what do you think is one thing that Wild fans actually don't know about Spurge? In terms of, like, you know, what he is like in that locker room and things like that.
Yeah, I think I think you notice that pretty quick, actually, when you have players like him coming into the room. You just see the, first of all, I think the respect that they have for veterans, older guys, and they, you see that and they earn your respect right away. I think that's, and that comes with the work ethic. And that comes the way you respect your, you know, the veteran guys, the trainers, like everyone around the team. So that's how you earn it, and he did that right away. And what they don't know about him, I think it's the, I like to call that a quiet confidence. And that's the way to lead. And that is something that I admire on a person or a player. And he definitely has that. And I had one of, I've used it when someone wanted me to describe Valtteri Filppula. He's very much like that.
Yeah.
And it's just a way of leading, and they have everyone's respect in the room, and you know you can count on them each and every day, and just the true pros.
A couple fun questions from Wild fans, then we'll wrap it up, Mikko. Most fun Wild locker room teammate that you had? Like any teammates that were just hilarious to be around in the locker room?
Probably the the funniest and the most annoying at the same time. I call him Mr. Minnesota. Hopefully Darby doesn't get get mad about it, but Mr. Alex Stalock. That's
likes to talk.
Oh yeah, he likes to talk, and very proud St. Paul guy, and yeah, but he was, no, in all seriousness, like just obviously funny, and but he lit the room every single day. But also is just when he got on the ice, the way he would work, and just a unique person.
Yeah.
Great teammate.
Yeah. One team that you hated playing against, and maybe one opponent that was
Yeah, I think that would change over the years. But if I have to name one, like over the years, it was Calgary.
Mm-hmm.
My first few, I liked to play against them. Always, it was physical, it was fair, it was tough opponent. I think to me, like I learned a lot from that, you know, coming or later for later in my career, but it was, and I think we lost, I don't know how many
games. Yeah, it was a lot of games up there.
You know, in Saddle Dome and things like that. So that was, they had a heavy, good team.
Yeah, well, that was the Regeers and the...
Yes, yeah. And Warner. So at the same time, like I really...
enough,
it was great. Mm-hmm. And we had some good battles and things like that, but that was a tough tough team to play against. Yeah.
I still, one of my favorite memories of you is when your first game back in Vancouver after Matthias Olin broke your leg and you scored in that game. You went right by that bench and taunted him. I'm like, that is like, you don't want to piss off Mikko. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do. I think, to be honest, I think media made it bigger than it is.
Yeah, that's what we do.
Yeah, I know, trust me. But I didn't want to, it was nothing against them or like, especially nothing, you know, I had a lot of respect for a lot of the players that they had, Sedins and, you know, whoever they had at that point. But it was just, obviously it was frustrating for me to miss those games, and it was a rivalry for us, and it was always a big game going in to Vancouver and get a chance to get a goal.
Yeah.
And just, it just, I don't know, just felt right and did it and can't take it back.
Yep. A couple more questions, I swear. Favorite arena that you played in besides the X, obviously?
Staples Center.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, just the atmosphere, or what, or just the...
I think everything about it, especially later on once they got the LA Live, and so like just the hotel, walking into the arena, you just felt the energy, and another team that I loved to play against, it was always heavy, fair, and just good hockey. I just loved it, and I just had success there.
Yeah,
it's true. Amazing. Like, you just know going into the game, and it's just, you know, some arenas you like it, some you don't, and But LA was always like the whole the whole package. I just loved it.
Yeah. I think he scored an overtime winner there once. You definitely had it in Edmonton. That was, I think, your last one with the Wild.
Yeah.
It was in Edmonton. Is there one player on the Wild that kind of reminds you of yourself?
On the current team?
Yep.
On the ice?
Yep. Or off the ice. This is just a reader.
You can ice. I think Eric Chanek.
Yeah.
I think... first of all, like what a teammate and just a great kid. Same thing like Spurgey, like you just knew right away when he got here, like you know what you're getting.
Uh-huh.
You just give him time and do the develop and get to the level that he can be. And I think now he's showing that. I'm so happy for his contract extension and we get to keep him here for so many years.
Yep.
You know what you're going to get out of him each and every night. The way he prepares all that. So I think, and he's a center, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. Two more questions.
He's a Swede, though.
Yeah, I know. I'm impressed how you've always, treated the Swedes well here. Broads, I mean, you have.
Awesome. They're great people.
But a lot of rivalry when Finland played Sweden. I remember those.
Oh, yeah.
Just a couple more questions. Somebody has a great question. What's it like for you now watching the game from above? Like, do you have a different perspective of it?
Yeah, it's easier now. Mm-hmm. To be honest, like the first time I was driving in, I think it was either practice or game, and I would take the same route that I did, you know, when I was still playing, and that was hard.
I was just talking to Kevin Fiala in the hallway waiting to do this podcast, and he said, I wonder how hard it is for him to walk into the building.
Now I enjoy it.
Yeah.
I think the memories are, you know, obviously great. But the first couple of times, it was really hard. And I actually mentioned that to Billy, too. I asked him, like, how did you feel? Because I said, like, I was driving in here today, and I had a tough ride.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just... when I come to XL, like you smell it, just everything about it. It's just, obviously you miss it and there's other days and moments that you miss it more. But like I said, I definitely enjoy it now. But the start was, it was tough.
Yeah. Isn't it weird how every arena has a distinct smell? Like, and I'm not even saying bad, like, you know,
I love the smell.
Yeah.
Once I go to the Zamboni tunnel, like past that, coming in or leaving, like that's where I'm like, yeah.
I remember that as a player too.
It was just
you can name any arena in this league. I could kind of give you what the smell is like, or at least envision it in my head. It's crazy. I remember my first time walking to Nassau Coliseum as a beat writer. It like brought me back to my childhood.
Yeah,
like that one probably is not a great smell. That one smelled like the circus. Last one from a reader, and then I got one final one for Nicholas Backstrom. That was actually, I mean, just kind of a really sweet one, But where do you think this is next? Like, what is going to happen? Like, what your role is going to be with the organization? What's the future Mikko Koivu going to be doing? And will it be in the United States?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to find out. I think I've tried now. I was, like, as we talked before, but coaching the Finnish World Junior team. Been seeing now the management, not much, but still I get a taste of it, what that is all like. But even there's so many different roles, you know, that you don't realize when you still play the game. So I think in a way that I do believe in life that you have to kind of let it come to you too a little bit, that you can't chase it. But I think this is something that you have to, you know, try to find a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. I don't have an answer for you right now, and I don't even have an answer for myself. I think motions kind of go back and forth a little bit, like coaching or things like that. But one thing is for sure, like I want to stay in a game, but I also want to be around my kids.
Yeah.
And they're so young still. So I really want to, you know, have my time with them and then coach my son's hockey team and then go to my daughter's gymnastics and things like that. I think you miss when you play, and while they're still young, I think.
How old are they now?
3, 6, and 8.
Yeah. What do you think, especially the 8-year-old and the 6? I mean, like, do they understand what's going to happen Sunday? I mean, is this going to be?
They ask about it a little bit and things like that. My son, the 6-year-old, who plays hockey, he goes, "So, Dad, like, does that mean that I can't have number 9 when I play for the Wild?"
That's awesome.
I said, "Well, maybe we'll make that.
Yeah,
we can."
It's happened before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so I think, I don't think they really understand, but they have a sense of it.
Yeah. I've covered fathers and sons. I don't think I'll make it to cover your son. I can almost guarantee that. So last question from Backstrom, and and it really was a good one. And by the way, he says the best line that he ever played with was you, Bruno, and Mietinen, which, and he's not kidding. That was a really good line for the Wild for a long time, or at least while Mietinen was here. But he says, does he enjoy life more now in Minnesota when he doesn't have to carry all the pressure for the team's success, or did he enjoy that pressure and challenge? Like, do you miss it, or is it like you content now to walk around town and not feel the pressure of an entire organization?
No, I enjoyed it.
Yeah,
I really did. I think obviously there's moments that it gets hard and things like that. But I think one of my coaches back in Finland, actually he's my off season coach, and the workouts would be tough, and Friday would be the tough workout every, like, to end the week, and he goes, like, just enjoy it.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, what do you mean? Like, and he said that you'll never have that feeling again once you retire.
Yeah,
that you can get to the level that you can push yourself and things like that. And now I did realize that when he said it, and I kept that in my mind. But I think the same kind of thing goes with the pressure. I think I wanted to enjoy it. Like, and it would challenge me. It would just push me. It would drive me to be better and to be better as a team,
yeah,
and things like that. So, but I'm okay with it. But there's things that I do miss, and I think that's something that obviously you'll never find it again,
yeah,
to the level that you were as a player. But something, hopefully, I can find something that that I can get close to,
yeah,
and then find that passion. Whatever it might be, but I hope in hockey.
Yeah, well, you still are in perfect shape. You look like you can go out there right now and play. At least maybe, like, sign a contract, win the big draw, go to the bench and change, but just so they get some big face-off wins when they need it. That'd be huge. Well,
it's ups and downs.
Yeah, Or maybe they just sign you as face-off coach. You go out there every now and then and work with the centers. That'd be a nice thing.
That's actually – those are things that you like to –
yeah,
but then, like I said, every individual is different,
yep,
and you can't. That's a tough thing to teach these pros anymore. I think you can give something that you if they'll ask, but at the end, they all have their own techniques and things that they believe in. So you sometimes better stay away.
Yeah. Well, hey, enjoy your big day. It's going to be quite the honor for you, Mikko. I mean, for longest contract in franchise history to start before, obviously, Parisian Suter. I was talking to Nick Schultz about this yesterday. Nick had the longest. He had a 6-year deal. Then you came along and signed the 7-year deal. First captain in Wild history full-time and first guy to get your name, your number, your jersey atop the XL Energy Center for the rest of time. Except if your son takes it one day. But I can't wait. I've watched these things also as a visiting writer. I weeped when at the Lundqvist one a couple of weeks ago. I remember welling up at the Iginla one. I just can't wait to watch your face and see how you handle it and, your family as well, your kids. I think it's just going to be an amazing afternoon, late afternoon, early evening here at XL Energy Center, Mikko. Congratulations.
Thank you. And I got to say, now that you brought Nick Schultz, I think one of the best examples about great people in this game, and long time
roommate
on the road, and
you wouldn't even let him move out when he was allowed to.
I know that was a little battle, but I had to give up on that one. So he got his own room, but like I said, just a first class guy, and what a teammate and a friend.
Yeah, I'll tell you just real quick the reason why I talked to him. What an amazing coincidence! So Miko and I are recording this the week before his day. Well, on Thursday in Philadelphia, Jared Spurgeon is going to break Nick Schultz's record for most games played by a Wild defenseman in front of Nick Schultz, their assistant coach, with Mike Yeo and John Torchetti on the bench, with Tricky Rick, who sewed his nameplate on for the first ever jersey that Jared wore. I just think it's just, you know, Chuck there, Brent there, Nick Seeler and Jerry Mayhew on the ice. So, I mean, the coincidence of all that. Yeah. So I'm doing this big story, and Nick was, you know, it's going to get to watch his record be broken.
Yeah,
so.
But he'll be okay with it.
Yeah, he'll be okay.
He'll be happy with it.
Then. Yeah.
And, but like I said, one of the best. One of the best ever.
Yeah, Sicky just walked in. I think that's the sign that we have to wrap it up. I told Miko, he's like, how long? I'm like, 25 minutes. We went 50. So Miko, really appreciate it. Thanks a lot, Miko. Congratulations.
Thanks for having me.
Really, really thank Miko Koivu for joining Straight from the Source today. Hope everybody enjoyed that. It's a side of Miko that you don't see a lot. You know, relaxed, happy, jovial, not getting ready for a big game, not responding to a victory or a loss, the latter that I never loved doing with Miko, especially late in his career. It just was never a fun thing. But to sit down with him and hear him talk about his children and cut open a vein about his relationship with Saku as a young guy and how he suddenly became much more at ease with the comparisons and things like that later in his career, I just think was really cool. I mean, when Miko Koivu was talking about the different scents of different arenas, you just know he's in a relaxed state. And I think he's just very appreciative of the way that the Minnesota Wild are treating him right now. And I think that he really is embracing whatever this new role is going to eventually be with this organization. Again, the gates open on Sunday at 3:45. The ceremony starts at 5:00 promptly, and then the Nashville Predators and the Minnesota Wild will play at XL Energy Center. Miko Koivu will drop the ceremonial face-off against Jared Spurgeon, what I'm assuming will be Mikael Granlund taking the draw. That makes all the sense in the world since we know that Mikael was Miko's protege for a long, long time. There will be a big story that comes out with this podcast, and also I will link in there some of the stories that I did before his 1,000th game. They were really, really cool at the time. Again, thanks for Miko for joining. The Wild are obviously in a big time schneid right now. They play the Detroit Red Wings on Thursday in Detroit and then Columbus on Friday, a place that traditionally has not been very kind to Minnesota, but both teams playing the second of a back-to-back, and we'll see what the Wild give there. And then again, the Sunday game against the Nashville Predators next week, the Boston Bruins and Chicago Blackhawks will be in town, but hopefully, or not hopefully, we will have a podcast before then, and it should be a fun podcast as well. I won't say who, because a lot of the players that are coming in for Miko's celebration, his former teammates, it's a surprise to Miko, as he even said on the podcast, but I'm trying to line up a couple guys to sit down for sort of mini pods to run next week, and one of them I've already lined up, and I'm sure there'll be another couple in the next few days as well. There are podcasts throughout this network as well at The Athletic. Eric Tulski, the assistant general manager of the Carolina Hurricanes, joins Sean Gentile and Craig Custance this week on The Athletic Hockey Show USA, and John Vogel, our awesome Buffalo Sabres beat writer, he joins Rob Pizzo, Sarah Sivian, and Jesse Granger on the Athletic Hockey Show Roundtable. Thanks for listening to Straight from the Source. Please follow us on your favorite podcast platform, and don't forget to leave a rating and review. And right now, get an annual subscription to The Athletic for just $1 a month for 6 months when you visit theathletic.com/straightfromthesource. Talk to you next week, everybody.